Hello, and welcome to part 6 of my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley, and I'm a professor in the Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where I've been teaching an undergraduate class titled Antarctic Ecology, Geology, History, and Policy. In this podcast, I have distilled this class down into numerous parts that cover all these topics about Antarctica. Part 6 presented here begins a new section of this podcast on Antarctic ecology, beginning with marine ecology. When I first went to Antarctica in the early 90s, I knew nothing about its marine environment and just assumed that because the water was so cold, little life could exist there. I was soon proven to be so wrong. One day I was walking back to the field hut where I was staying from the Polish research station Arctowski on King George Island. One of the scientists working at Arctowski that summer, a Belgian marine biologist, happened to be on the beach, sifting through a dredge sample that the Polish vessel had taken for him from the bottom of Admiralty Bay. I was amazed to see so much life, brittle stars, starfish, urchins, and other species. Thus began my re-education on how rich and diverse the marine environment could be in these cold waters. In part 4 of this podcast, I described how sea ice forms and traps marine algae that can grow in the ice before it's released back to the ocean when the ice melts. This physical process of ice formation thus relates directly to the biological productivity of the marine environment in Antarctica. Sea ice algae is comprised primarily of unicellular diatoms, some of which are only found in the Southern Ocean, and can withstand temperatures to below freezing and the high salinity of the Antarctic waters. Other species are found in both Arctic and Antarctic waters, and so are indicator species for polar environments. Although phytoplankton productivity is higher in the open ocean than in sea ice, the amount of algae that is released from the ice is enough to be an important driver of marine productivity near the continent, where water and column productivity would otherwise be negligible, and provides food for a high trophic species. Not only that, the algae in the sea ice reaches peak production in November, at the beginning of the Antarctic summer, when most needed to stimulate the entire food chain. Also in a previous podcast, I mentioned how krill is a keystone species in Antarctica, so let's talk about it next. Krill is a small crustacean, similar to shrimp, that feeds on bacteria, diatoms, and algae. There are two species of krill in the Southern Ocean that are most important in this keystone role. Antarctic krill, Euphausiae superba, which is abundant in the Antarctic Peninsula as well as other open ocean regions around Antarctica, and crystal krill, Euphausia crystal orophaeus, which is abundant farther south in coastal areas around the continent, such as in the Ross Sea region. Antarctic krill have a complex life cycle, and an individual krill can live up to 7 to 10 years, quite a long lifespan for such a small organism. Sea ice is key to their productivity as they feed below the ice, where algae is melting from the bottom and can be scraped up by the krill. Thus, the more sea ice, the more algae, and the more food for krill. Recall that the sea ice is providing peak amounts of algae in November. The krill benefit from all this food and spawn in January by laying eggs in surface waters. These eggs slowly sink to over 2,000 meters in depth and hatch after 10 days. Krill form large swarms that can be extremely dense in numbers. In fact, there can be as many as 60,000 krill per cubic meter in some of these swarms. Such an abundance of concentrated food make krill a very attractive prey to fish, penguins, some seals and fur seals, and baleen whales. Humpback whales, for example, travel thousands of kilometers each year in a migration to the Southern Ocean in summer just to partake in the huge influx of food provided by krill each year. This is why krill is such an important resource for the entire food web and a keystone species. Without it, this food web would collapse. Crystal krill has a slightly different life cycle than Antarctic krill, as it prefers the coastal waters, so its eggs are buoyant and do not sink. Otherwise, they are just as important in the food chain for a variety of krill predators, including penguins, just as much as the Antarctic krill. It's important to note here that krill numbers will be large or small each year depending on the amount of sea ice that same year, so that the rest of the food chain also benefits that year. Penguin reproductive success, for example, is tied directly to krill productivity during the same summer season. Now let's return to the benthic marine environment in Antarctica that I learned about on King George Island in the early 1990s. The continental shelf around Antarctica is relatively narrow and shallow, with an average depth of about 500 meters. It has a surprising diversity of species, though, of which about 80% are endemic or only found in Antarctica. Some groups, such as sea spiders or pycnogonids, are more diverse here than anywhere else in the world, and some reach greater sizes than other areas of the world. Gigantism among marine invertebrates is perhaps possible from the cold, oxygen-rich waters in Antarctica, allowing the evolution of unusually large sea spiders, isopods, and other species, more so than you find in other oceans of the world. The diversity of endemic and unusual species in Antarctica has developed over millions of years of isolation from other oceans, thanks mostly to the presence of the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, discussed in a previous podcast. However, that diversity is under threat from invasive species, including the king crab, a predator of starfish and other marine invertebrates that has been gradually moving across the ocean from South America and is close to colonizing the continental shelf in the Antarctic Peninsula. If successful, this predator would wreak havoc on a marine benthic community that took millions of years to form. We'll return to the impact of introduced species in Antarctica in a later podcast. Also along the coast of Antarctica, especially in the Antarctic Peninsula, there is another marine community associated with kelp. Kelp is a form of macroalgae and is one of the fastest-growing marine plants. One particular species in Antarctica, bull kelp, has evolved to withstand the heavy seas and surf. It is the strongest kelp in the world and can reach lengths of over 20 meters. Living within the bull kelp forests are over 90 species of worms, mollusks, mites, sea stars, sea cucumbers, and numerous crustaceans, making it a highly diverse community. Occasionally, some of this kelp is still not strong enough for the heavy surf and waves in Antarctica, and I have found it washed up on beaches, looking like a long, thick rubber rope and quite heavy to pick up and move. Elephant seals love this washed-up kelp, as it makes a nice soft bed for them on the beach. Now let's move on to the fish community in Antarctica. As with the benthic community, there is a high degree of endemism here, thanks again to the isolation from the Antarctic Circumpolar Current. One group in particular, the notothenids, or ice fish, are dominant, with hundreds of species adapted to the cold Antarctic waters. These amazing fish have been isolated in these cold waters at temperatures less than 5 degrees Celsius for 14 to 15 million years. They are stenothermic, or restricted to a narrow temperature range, so increasing ocean temperatures are a concern for their future. There are over 200 species in the open ocean and another 100 in continental shelf waters. In fact, about 90% of the fish fauna on the shelf in Antarctica are ice fish. These fish also have no swim bladder, so are neutrally buoyant, meaning they do not rise or sink in the water column and can remain at a specific depth. Most remarkable of all, though, is that they withstand freezing by producing glycoprotein antifreeze that binds to ice crystals and prevents their formation. Although antifreezes like this have been found in other species in the world, they evolve independently in ice fish isolated in Antarctica and were first discovered by Dr. Art de Vries in 1970. As with krill, some of these ice fish are important prey in the Antarctic marine food chain. One in particular is the Antarctic silverfish, Pleurogramma antarcticum. Some seals and penguins rely on this heavily. This fish spawns near the surface, with larval forms and juveniles remaining in the upper water column, while older fish migrate to deep waters. The larval forms are small enough for penguins to capture and consume, so frequently appear in diet samples of Adelie, Chinstrap, and Gentoo penguins, along with krill and even squid. One last group of ice fish to mention is the chinichthyids, which are quite unusual in being transparent. You can see right through them in the water. That's because these fish have almost no hemoglobin in their blood, less than 1%, that adds to this transparency as well as a lack of scales. Hemoglobin carries oxygen to all the tissues in the body, so how does this fish go without it? First, they have a very low metabolism, so need less oxygen in general. In the cold Antarctic waters, oxygen is more soluble and enriched, so the fish can actually absorb it directly from the water through their skin. The oxygen enters their blood and is transported by plasma instead of hemoglobin. They also have a relatively larger heart and blood vessels to help pump this blood through the body. In essence, these fish have white blood, the only known vertebrate to have this. There is, of course, much more to the ecology of the marine environment that I can present here. Whales, seals, penguins, and other seabirds are a large part of this ecosystem, but I will reserve more on them for later podcasts. Instead, I'd like to move on to describing the terrestrial ecology of Antarctica. Thank you for listening to my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley of the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and I hope you will tune in to Part 7, Terrestrial Ecology.